Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. We're here until 5 a.m. Coming up after the 3 o'clock news, we're going to talk with Jay Warren and with Matthew Hoffman about their co-hosting screening of the great silent film classic Wings, and that's coming up. We're going to talk about weird animal encounters and more and pop-up video a little later on. But right now, we want to welcome back to the show award-winning author, columnist, an expert, and speaker about the world of space, and it's Rod Pyle. You can check out rodpylebooks.com, P-Y-L-E, and let's welcome Rod to the show. Rod, welcome back, sir.
Nick, how nice to talk to you again.
As always, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Give everybody a quick background on you and how you got started into space and all that stuff.
Well, either fortunately or unfortunately for me, I grew up during the space age. I say unfortunately because it means I'm an old guy, but I got to grow up seeing all this stuff happen for the first time. So I kind of became aware of it late in the Gemini program. Got to watch the Apollo missions take off for the moon, all of them. Got to play hooky from school to stay home and watch them, at least as long as the three, count them, three networks we have are showing them.
Yeah.
They lost interest after Apollo 14.
Yeah.
But it was just a sensational time, and there were periods where these incredible missions of exploration were taken off every 2 months. So it was just a great time to grow up, and I always knew I wanted to be a part of that somehow. So I went off to college to study science, and science was a little smarter than I was, so after doing a lot of that, I finally got into media and TV, led to books and so forth, and I've been writing books for 13 years, and now I'm editing a space magazine called Ad Astra, which is great fun.
Yeah.
And it's almost like having a job, except it's fun.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same way. If you love what you do, it's really good. It's really a blessed thing because I've spent many years doing jobs that I didn't love at all.
What was your worst one?
Oh man, I mean, I don't even know where to begin. I was never really fond of working at a grocery store for 11 years. Also flipping burgers, I did that.
I did that at Arby's. They weren't even real burgers.
You worked at Arby's? That's fantastic, Rod.
I worked at Arby's.
You know, I think. By the way, Rod, I think you should lead with that when you're telling everybody your bio.
It's not a moment I'm proud of.
No
way. I took home some meat one night on New Year's Eve because we weren't going to open the next day.
Uh-huh.
And I chopped it up and put it in my dog's bowl. And I kid you not, my dog, who would eat cat poo, by the way, went over and sniffed that meat and looked at me like, you got to be joking, and walked away. And I thought, oh, dear.
Wow.
And then I had a job for a year washing car parts with kerosene. And, of course, then you didn't have a respirator or gloves.
Oh,
you know?
Sure. Yeah.
I probably got another year.
There you go. Well, really quickly, before we break here for the news, Ad Astra is the magazine that you're now the editor for, and it's a publication of the National Space Society. Before we break here, tell us about the NSS.
NSS is the oldest human space flight advocacy group. Space settlement advocacy is really their main goal, to get people out in the solar system. They've been around since the 70s. And merged with another organization called the L5 Society in the late 80s. And it's about 30,000 people all told with a common goal. And we've got this great conference coming up May 24th through 27th in L.A. where we talk about all this stuff. Everybody is welcome. It's completely inclusive. We got Jeff Bezos showing up, Buzz Aldrin, Freeman Dyson, Frank Drake from SETI, David Brin, the science fiction author. It's just a great time. So if people want to know more about it, they can go to isdc2018.nss.org, and all the information's right there.
Right. And we're going to talk more about that conference coming up a little bit later on. But we've got some stories to talk about and all kinds of additional stories here that we're going to get to that are space-related. And if anybody has any comments or questions about space, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Rod, hang on, okay?
You bet.
All right, Rod Pyle is with us. He's our space expert. Check out rodpylebooks.com and get your questions in if you want. 312-981-7200. Talk or text any and all space-related questions. Lots to talk about with Rod coming up after we take a break for the news, which is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue, looking out at quiet Pioneer Court right here. on WGN. And we're here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and your Wildcard Wednesday request.
Wildcard Wednesday!
And that's any artist, any song, anything. Request them now. We'll play them later. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And Facebook is the best way to stay connected. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us. We're going to be talking with Matthew Hoffman and Jay Warren about their co-host screenings of Wings, the great silent film. And that'll be coming up after 3 o'clock. Skip Skipley's on his way. We got a pop-up video and more coming up. But right now, Rod Pyle is with us. He's an award-winning author, a columnist, a speaker on space, and an expert. He's now the editor for Ad Astra Magazine, which is a publication of National Space Society. RodPyleBooks.com is his website. Let's welcome Rod back to the show. Hi, Rod.
Hi there. I share a fanboy moment with you before we launch off?
Absolutely.
So I was speaking at this conference back in early March called the Celebrate Innovation Week Conference. It's in Des Moines. A guy named Anthony Poston runs it. Probably the best-run conference I've ever spoken at.
Okay.
And Jonathan Frakes was one of the speakers there. So I thought, I haven't seen this guy since I worked on the very end of episodes of TNG, and I knew he wouldn't remember me, but, you know, actors, you say, do you remember me? They go, sure. So I'm sitting there signing books, and he walks in, and I kind of looked at him and smiled, and he said, I know you, and walked over. Next thing I know, he's done his talk, you know, he came running down the aisle saying, red alert, and all that stuff. It was great.
Yeah.
And we ended up drinking together for about 4 hours.
Wow!
And I was in nirvana, because he was the nicest guy on the set. He was always cheerful. He did pratfalls just to keep people amused and engaged and all that.
Yeah.
And I've been dying to ask him for years, you know, when you're doing that leg over the chair thing, did you ever clip the soft parts? He just smiled and said, ouch. And I thought, okay.
There you go.
That's my answer.
So that is so cool. That's so,
yeah,
so cool.
Neat.
Man, that is very, very cool. That's great. It's a great story, man. All right. So let's get to a couple of stories here. You recently wrote a piece about privatizing the moon that appeared in Ad Astra. And there's a sort of a story that we can link up with that, and that's that NASA's Lunar Space Station is almost here, the Gateway. Tell us a little bit about that.
So this is the successor of the International Space Station. So as most people know, the space station will be probably deorbited in 2025, maybe 2024. There were talks about extending it to 2028, but doesn't look like it's going to happen. At least that's not the plan right now. It's older. It's kind of served its purpose. There's still a lot of good things you could do with it, but these things only last so long. And NASA's got a flat budget, so if it wants to do other things, it can't keep spending the billions it takes to keep the space station up. So they're going to stop that program and do something smaller but similar out in an orbit around the moon, and that's called the Lunar Orbital Platform / Gateway. So we need a name competition for that, because they need something, you know, Artemis or something, but not the LOPG, that's just not going to work.
Right.
And it's, like I said, it's smaller, so it'll be launched in modules probably by the SLS, the Space Launch System, which should come online early in the 2020s. There's a lot of discussion about that. They've got some problems with launch gantries and so forth, but eventually it'll get online. They'll start launching modules up probably 2022, 2023, link them up out by the moon. And it won't be continuously crewed. It'll be 30-day missions for crews of up to 4 initially. And they're going to go out there and orbit the moon. And they'll continue doing some work like they're doing on the space station, but there's more you can do out there. You can send robots down to the surface of the moon, control them from orbit. You're exposed to hard radiation out there in space because you're no longer under the protective magnetosphere of the Earth. So they're going to be looking at that and the effects that has on the human body and so forth. And eventually this could be a staging point for getting back to the moon's surface with landings and so forth. Right now NASA doesn't have a lander planned. They did back in the 2000-aughts, but at this point they don't have anything planned. But actually Jeff Bezos of Amazon.com and Blue Origin, which is his aerospace company, is planning on building something that would be able to land about the same amount of mass as the LEM did. The lunar module.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch of stuff happening there. It's all really exciting. And ultimately, it's possible this could be a way station for Mars missions. There's some discussion there about, you know, could it be in the right orbit and so forth. But if you can come back to that lunar station instead of heading straight back to Earth, you can slow down in lunar orbit, and then you don't hit the Earth at the ridiculous speeds that you would if you were coming directly back from Mars. So there's a lot of good things to be done there, and it's pretty neat.
And does the time frame seem realistic to you, Ron?
No. We went through the shuttle that took longer than planned, but it did launch in a few years of its expected time. And then the shuttle stopped, and we went through, okay, we're replacing the access to the space station. We'll ride with the Russians for a couple of years, and then we'll go up in these private vehicles in SpaceX and Boeing. And that's years late. And in the interim, we had the Constellation Return to the Moon project that started in the early 2000s and then got canceled about 2010. So, you know, it's a shifting target, but we finally have a NASA administrator after almost a year and a half of waiting. They finally confirmed Jim Bridenstine, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives them a little more teeth in terms of getting things done. We've got this new National Space Council, which is a group of highly placed advisors to the president that helps formulate overall NASA policy and mission goals and so forth. So that gives them a little more. I mean, NASA has plenty of direction and plans on its own, but this gives them a little more clout with Congress. Let's say that. So, you know, there's a bunch of reasons to think things can go well. And then we've got stuff like, you know, the Falcon Heavy was an amazingly successful launch a couple months back.
Yeah.
And with that ability to carry that kind of mass at those low prices, if NASA could figure out how to split the bread between that and their own programs, you know, the things that they build and run, now you've really got something. You've got this space ecosystem where you can start doing some amazing stuff, and it's affordable. So that's what makes this so cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, you know, I wanted to tie in this piece that you wrote, and the first line of the piece that you wrote is, why have we not been back to the moon in nearly half a century? Well, answer that.
Well, and let me put that in another context.
All right.
We're almost as far away in a few years from the first landing on the moon as that was from the first flight of the Wright brothers flying Canvas.
Oh, wow.
When you put it in that context, you begin to think, what's going on?
Yeah, wow.
Well, you know, the future didn't quite unfold as we had thought. It wasn't all about flying cars and cities in the skies. It was about miniaturization and consumerism and the digitization of society. And that, in a way, doesn't really press for more exploration of space. I think we kind of turned inward. It got really expensive to access space. The shuttle was not a cheap program. We did build this incredible space station. I mean, that was absolute fantasy back in the Apollo days. We had Skylab a little after that. But the idea of this enormous space station where people could go up and stay for a year at a time, do all this research, be safe, I mean, that was a very big deal. So let's not shortchange NASA. But
right.
Yeah, why didn't we go back to the moon? There was a prevailing feeling we had been there and seen enough of it. I mean, six landing sites, not much. Imagine sampling six parts of the United States and trying to figure out what everything was like.
Yeah, yeah.
If you landed in Barstow up north of me in the desert, I always bash Barstow, you wouldn't think much of Chicago, right? You go, okay, we've seen Earth, we've done it. So there was that, and it's expensive and it's hard to do. So there's a whole bunch of reasons, but at this point, you know, we've been working on the Space Launch System for a long time. We've been working on the Orion capsule for quite a long time. And I'm hoping by 2022-ish that they'll both be ready to go out and do these great missions. And then, as I said, if we blend properly with private industry, we can start getting routine access to the surface of the moon. There's all kinds of resources down there we can use. I think I might have mentioned that in that article.
Yeah, yeah.
There's water ice on the poles, we're pretty sure. There's all kinds of metals and glass that can be smelted out of the lunar soil. So you can start building and using things right there that you don't have to launch anymore, and now you're saving buckets of money, and you can get a real space ecosystem and infrastructure going, and that's really the tipping point, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting piece that you put together. And speaking of time frames, how long before Trump's Space Force happens?
Well... You know, you can ask two different people in the Air Force to get two very different answers. There's a little bit of schism over that. There's a group that thinks, look, we're fine as we are. We can do this with the system and the structure that we've got. Let's just move forward that way. And then there's the other side that says, no, we need a separate space force. There's a whole separate division of the military.
Yeah.
The overriding idea is that you want to protect assets in space. So you want to protect orbital satellites, both commercial and military.
Right.
And as commercial space begins to spin out, at least in the eyes of some of the Air Force guys I've listened to when they speak about this, you want to be able to protect, you know, mining claims and commerce and all that kind of stuff. It's a little bit like the Coast Guard. I think a lot of people got the idea right up front, this is guys zooming and booming in Viper fighters and so forth.
Right.
And it may eventually come to that, but initially at least, it's going to be more about robotics and automated interdiction systems and so forth. So that's really the kind of thing you're talking about. How long? You know, if they put the kind of money into it that they put into some other programs, I mean, look what's been spent on the F-35. What's that, like $400 billion at this point? You could do it in a couple of years.
Wow. I thought Trump's speech was, you know, I mean, how did you guys feel about that particular speech? I mean, it was very pro-space travel.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for the NSS on that one because we're politically neutral. My view was it was a little rangy, you know. It's like, well, hey, look what the Coast Guard does here. Space is just like that. You know, it's a little more complicated than that.
Right.
But I know he was going for big talking points. And you don't want to get off in the weeds with the facts and the figures and start pulling up charts and graphs and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Doing that kind of talk.
Right.
So, you know, it's a little inspirational. It's a little aspirational. We don't want to militarize space. And we've signed a treaty with the Russians and a number of other countries back in 1967 that says we're not going to militarize space. At least not directly and not with weapons of mass destruction. But I think it's inevitable that there will be some protective mechanisms there because any technological society that's reached a certain point gets a lot from the orbital ecosystem up there. You've got military satellites, commercial satellites, all kinds of commerce, GPS, banking takes place through satellites now. So you've got to protect those things, and people are getting nervous about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. All right, Rod, hang on a second, okay?
You bet.
All right, Rod Pyle is with us, and he is a great author of many, many books about space. He's a columnist, a speaker on space. RodPyleBooks.com is the website. And if you have a question or a comment about space, 312-981-7200. We'll get back with Rod right after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. And it's 312-981-7200. We'll play them later. We're going to talk about the two screenings of Wings that are going to take place today and tonight at the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge. Jay Warren and Matthew Hoffman are going to join us to talk about that and much more. So 312-981-7200, pop-up video coming up later as well. Right now, though, we're talking with Rod Pyle. He's an award-winning author, a columnist, and a speaker on space. You can check out rodpylebooks.com. That's P-Y-L-E, rodpylebooks.com, for more information. And let's welcome Rod back. Welcome back, Rod.
Thanks, and I want to go to that screening. I wish you weren't so far away. That's a cool film.
Yeah, no, it's a great movie, and we'll talk all about it. The first movie to ever win Best Picture in the Academy Awards. Yeah. And it's still amazing to watch now. It's 1927.
Now, I wonder how many other Academy Awards are won by airplane combat movies.
That's a good question. I don't think many.
Maybe none.
I'm trying to think if there have been. Wow. All right. We've got a couple of listeners who have questions for you, Rod.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Donald on WGN. Go ahead, Donald. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about the feasibility of a space elevator, where you could actually take an elevator up to to the 100,000 miles up and use that as a launch plane.
It's interesting. I mean, I don't know a lot about them, but there's a session at this conference I was talking about earlier that's talking about that, and I put up some posts on Facebook, and it got like 7,000 or 8,000 views in the first day, whereas other ones were getting 4,000 or something. Wow, this is popular.
Yeah.
So people love this idea. It's feasible theoretically. It's the materials problem. You know, what are you going to use for that cable that lets that thing go up there? So basically,
right. There's actually a book out. I don't mean to interrupt, but Pillar to the Sky. Yeah. It's a book that came out in 2014. And it's supposedly by a best-selling author, but it's actually supposed to be based on the current research. And it involves nanotechnology with carbon, where it would be super, super thin and super strong fibers that would just be initially, they'd be they'd be woven, they'd be spun around, and then later on, maybe into sheets, as things advance, so that you would actually have a stronger cable, and the payloads could be bigger, and you could use Earth's gravity, and gravity in general to move things around instead of having expensive payloads.
Yeah, and they're great and they're cheap. You just don't want to fly your airplane past it. That would be a bad day.
Oh, boy.
Put your wing on it. But, they talk about carbon nanostructures and building these immensely strong, very thin cables. And basically, you've got a big weight out on the end of it, and it's spinning around at the same rate the Earth is turning. So all you need is the motive force to get the mass up and down the cable, which is great. So if they can figure it out, that opens up all kinds of things. And now you're really dropping the cost of access to space, and big stuff can happen. So, yeah, great question, and someday.
Okay. All right, Donald, thanks for your call. Donald, thanks for your call. Are they going to have to hire somebody to be an operator, like an elevator operator on it?
I'll volunteer.
Yes.
As long as it's big enough. You know?
Exactly.
If it's a little teeny thing, it would do so well. But big space elevator with windows, you bet.
Yeah. All right. Here's Joe on WGN. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, I know your guess is on the scientific side, but this might be a political question. I know he's not, you know, you might have an inkling, okay? Regarding the moon, I'm looking at China taking coral atolls and building Air Force bases out of them. Last count I saw was about 5 or 6. You know, naturalists should be in uproar because they're taking coral, they're destroying reefs and building airports, whatever. Russia's aggression, acquiring countries, I should say. So on the moon, I was unaware we had any kind of a compact whatsoever, but how steadfast is that? Let's say we planted a flag there how many years ago, supposedly?
6 of them, yeah, back 50 years ago almost, and they're all faded to white now because nylon doesn't do well in that kind of UV, but yeah, they're there. We didn't claim it, however. We went there for all mankind, famously.
Understood, yep.
And the plaques say that, you know, the plaques on each lunar module. Everybody has observed the Outer Space Treaty, which is what that thing signed in 1967 was called, pretty steadfastly. There have been some attempts by the U.S. to try and modify it a bit to open up mining of asteroids and so forth. But at some point, you know, there's going to be a more aggressive discussion about property rights out there. Maybe not even the moon. You know, maybe somebody sees an asteroid that's ideally situated for mining, and it's got all kinds of stuff on it you want. It's got water. It's got precious metals. It's got rare earth elements. It's got all this stuff that you want to use both in space and maybe bring some of it back to Earth. How do you do that? And how do you do that with international treaties? And can you claim the asteroid, or are you just claiming the rights to mine it? So as Rick Tomlinson, who's a big figure in new space, likes to say, I don't want to own the ocean. I just want to own the fish I pull out of the water. So that's kind of where we're going at this point. But at some point, I think you're right, people are going to start looking at stakeholder rights and so forth. And that's going to become a more intense discussion. And it'll probably continue to be governed loosely by the Outer Space Treaty, but it'll have to be modified as we move ahead, because back in 67, we were just interested in getting to the moon before the Soviet Union.
Right.
We weren't thinking about all this other stuff.
Right. Okay. All right, Joe, thanks for the call. Really quickly, another Joe texts in, can you in layman's terms explain the difference between a black hole and a wormhole? We don't have to be here all night, Rod, but if you can...
I couldn't do it all night. Basically, a black hole is something that's out there. It's proven. It's a collapsed star that's got such an intense gravitational field that if it pulls something in, and there's always weird physics about, you know, once you get the event horizon, from your point of view, you're there forever and all that. But if you're in a spaceship, you get pulled in, you're crushed down to a point of nothingness, and you become a little blip of energy, and that's the end of you. You don't go anywhere. A wormhole is a theoretical construct of two entangled black holes that are in different parts of the universe. So as you've seen in Star Trek, when they enter those big, beautiful whirling vortexes, you enter at one point and pop out another. So basically it's a short circuit in space-time, which compresses all this long travel going the long way to this quick trip. So if you imagine a big rubber sheet folded over and a hole punched through it, and you can go through one hole and out the other, you've just circumvented this entire wide loop you'd have to do if you want to lay around
it. They do a good job explaining it in Interstellar.
Oh, yeah, you like that movie.
I do, yes. Yeah, in fact, I love that movie very much.
Can I just say it once again? 3 hours of love conquers all, but okay, I'm with you. I'm with you. Matthew McConaughey, I mean, you know, come on. But anyway.
All right. Okay, you know, before we get you out of here, since we were talking about entertainment, really quickly, did you like the new Lost in Space? I haven't watched it yet.
You should. You know, they have to work pretty hard to try and keep the original conceit going, because it's a family in space, and this time the robot's an alien, and he still says Danger Will Robinson, but he does it with a lot more gravitas and genuine feeling than the other guy. You know, I had to really kind of suffer through the first couple episodes, but it got better, picked up steam, and I'll stay with it. I wouldn't say it's as good as The Expanse for hard science fiction, but for a slightly younger audience and people that have any affection at all for the original, which is kind of hard to do, it's fun. It really is worth watching. The acting's first rate. The effects are great.
Yeah.
The effects are right up there, man. I mean, they're as good or better than Interstellar. That's not possible. It's really worth watching. I just can't resist when I'm on with you.
I know. Yeah, all right. Well, listen, Rod, always a pleasure to talk to you. And everybody who wants to find out about that conference, it's happening May 24th through the 27th in L.A. It's the International Space Development Conference. Jeff Bezos and tons of other people are going to be there, including you. And people should check it out for more information.
And you should come.
Okay, I'll try.
Please.
I'll see what I can do. Can we have a special conference about the greatness of Interstellar? Would that work out?
You bet.
All right. All right, Rod.
Anything for you, Nick.
All right, buddy. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Good night.
That's Rod Pyle, everybody. Check out rodpylebooks.com. News coming up after this.